chair for what promised to be a very boring night. He tried to keep his eyes off Lyme as the billionaire went about his nighttime rituals in the bathroom, feeling he was invading the man's privacy. But that was what Protek was being paid $25,000 a day for, so he made himself watch at least sporadically, his eyes otherwise occupied with the screens that covered the grounds. He paid particular attention to the gardens, which contained the likeliest possible hiding places. Lyme, now clothed in satin pajamas, turned off the bathroom lights and padded softly across the luxurious oriental carpet. Before climbing into bed, he slid his bay windows open and hit a switch that sent a set of glass curtains, bulletproof as well as electrified, into place before them, so his penchant for fresh air could not lead to his overnight demise. From his bed seconds later, Lyme flicked a switch above the headboard which plunged the room into a darkness impenetrable to all but infrared cameras. Nelson watched as Jordan Lyme began the slide toward totally protected sleep. The next hour passed innocently, as Nelson tried not to nod off. The earpiece that relayed sounds from Lyme's bedroom broadcast only snoring. What Nelson really wanted was to be home in his own bed enjoying a similar repose, minus the cameras. Suddenly, Nelson's earpiece registered the sound of glass breaking. Shocked, wide awake, he leaned toward the screens. The pair of cameras sweeping Lyme's bedroom had stopped. In the next instant, their screens on the monitoring board filled with garbled interference. What the hell? He was about to call up the guards at Lyme's door when screams filled his right ear. Two tours in Nam, and he had never heard anything like this high-pitched wailing that curdled the blood in his veins. Through the ragged interference, Nelson made out something splashing against one of the camera lenses. Blood. He was out of his chair by then, striking the panic button before him with a trembling hand. A piercing shrill split the quiet of the night, but Nelson's right ear was still locked on the screaming coming from Lyme's bedroom, screaming that now gave way to rasps and gurgling, along with the harsh sound of something being torn. All this came through his transistorized earpiece while he hurtled up the stairs, joined by guards converging from all angles. Logic told him whatever was happening in the bedroom was impossible. Lyme was safe and alive, and all this was a terrible mistake. Outside the mansion, the helicopter cut unceasing patterns through the night. Its huge halogen floodlights illuminated every crack and crevice to reveal nothing amiss on the grounds. The alarm continued to shriek. In Nelson's ear, there was only a dripping sound. He sprinted down the third floor corridor to find guards working futilely at the electronically sealed door. Drip. Drip. Drip.
Out of the way!
Nelson jammed his access card into its slot without a fumble. The door parted from its seal, and he threw his shoulder against it, the professional in him still issuing the proper orders.
Stay out!
Drip. 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 And then he was inside. Jordan Lyme's eyes glared up at him, open and bulging. From the rug, where his head had been separated from his body. The dripping sound now came in twisted stereo, electronically in his right ear and live in the left. The dripping was blood, and the blood was everywhere. Nelson leaned over and retched. Vomit spilled up his throat and drenched the already sodden rug. He mopped the excess from his mouth as his eyes struggled to focus on the scene. The remnants of Jordan Lyme's headless torso lay half on and half off the bed. A severed arm was near the pillow. A leg hung over a chair next to the bed. Jordan Lyme had been torn apart limb from limb. The door and window seals had not been broken. No penetration alarm had been sounded. Then how? Nelson wondered as the floor seemed to waver beneath him. How? Chapter 2.
It's that right just up ahead,
David Kamansky told his driver. That's not a road, the man said.
It's not paved, but it'll do just fine.
They had been driving for 3 hours from an airfield carved out of the Vermont forest. Kamansky had directions, but in Vermont it was difficult to tell where one town ended and another began. They'd been doing fine until they got off Route 3 and entered a maze of roads with few markings. The Ford sedan thumped and stumbled down the narrow dirt road, branches scraping at both sides. An hour before, they had stumbled upon Lindenville quite by accident. They'd stopped at a diner to ask directions, and it turned out to be Miss Lindenville's in the very town they sought. The four took a hump badly.
Easy,
Kamansky instructed as he tried to